wondrous. And as it is Lincolnshire Day...
Hi, I'm Jim Broadbent. You're listening to Siren Radio 107.3 FM.
Indeed, Jim Broadbent, just one of the famous Lincolnshire people that we'll be referring to as we progress through Lincolnshire Day, October the 1st, 2015. Wondrous, wondrous in every sense of the word. So clearly, Natalie, we need the Yorkshire perspective on this. And as a Yorkshire contributor, you know, who obviously graduated from the University of Lincoln, albeit, you know, on the basis of then moving back to Leeds to do postgraduate studies at the University of Leeds and get your MA there. What's your own view on Lincolnshire Day, which actually was first held in 2006?
Oh, yeah. I think happy Lincolnshire Day to the folk of Lincolnshire.
They'll appreciate that so much. It's like the royal message. It's like Meryl Streep coming down to actually sort of give an official... I can see the Lincolnshire Echo people now already typing away thinking, Natalie Tuck has wished us happy Lincolnshire Day. So what's it all about? Well, it's basically to commemorate the anniversary of the Lincolnshire Rising, which was a revolt by Catholics against the establishment of the Church of England by Henry VIII in 1536. Clearly, we'll be talking to Richard Fitzwilliams about this, even though he wants
Brilliant,
to talk about
yeah.
his recent trip to Italy and Rome. He's all gone romantic on us, and he's arrivederci Roma. First official Lincolnshire Day, as we said, held in 2006. And apparently the date was actually voted for by readers of Lincolnshire Life magazine and another radio station in Lincolnshire. I think it's BBC something or other. Difficult to tell where we're going. Eva, as a Lincolnshire lass, I mean, do you like to celebrate Lincolnshire Day?
Well, I actually had no idea about it until 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, so. Well, you see, that's the whole scenario. Well, the day actually aims to encourage local people, of whom you are one, often known as yellow bellies. So, did you take that?
I do know the yellow bellies. Yeah.
I mean, this is clearly know. Jessica explains why I've got a yellow sort of piglet staring at me, giving me the eye, and you're looking at his or her backside.
I'm looking at its backside. Don't know what's happening.
Sometimes, Natalie, I think, you know, some of the people who actually set out this studio, I mean, the giant badger is also, it's like being stared at from all sorts of angles, saying, don't mess up. Do not mess up. It's Lincolnshire Day.
That's how I feel.
Exactly.
I can see their souls.
It's the home of Lincolnshire sausages, of course, Bateman's Brewery, and Lincolnshire poacher cheese. The yellow bellies, of course, is the name of those who have moved from the county that effectively sort of honours Lincolnshire's traditions, past and culture. Some people actually dress up in yellow to celebrate the day.
Really? We'll have to keep an eye out for the yellow bellies.
I wonder if any undergraduates will sort of be dressed in yellow. Perhaps I should welcome in the reporting continuity and change, the origins of modern Britain, science fiction people actually say, so welcome. Good should I? Famous people in the county. Natalie, we had one of them, Jim Broadbent. Would you like to echo any other folk who've come from Lincolnshire?
Margaret Thatcher.
Baroness Thatcher, of course, Grantham Fine, Sonora, etc. Alfred Lord Tennyson, of course, former poet laureate. Sir Isaac Newton, you know, without Lincolnshire Day, we'd probably be floating away because obviously gravity hadn't been discovered. Joseph Banks, building named after that. Joseph Banks Laboratories, of course, explorer and botanist. George Boole, of whom, Boole Foundation and Boole work was coming through. And Dave Kenyon will be back with us in a few weeks' time talking about George Boole. Mathematician. Tony Jacklin, golfer, and Dame Joan Plowright, the actress, as well as explorer Matthew Flinders. So not as many as Yorkshire.
Quite a few, but not as many as Yorkshire.
Because you wouldn't expect it, really, would you? Sorry, there we are. They've got, of course, the Red Arrows RAF display team, Lincoln Cathedral, and so on. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's Lincolnshire Day. What a way to celebrate. Cousins. Jessica, how many cousins have you got?
Oh, too many. They're all over the place.
Oh, all right, okay.
I wouldn't know how many I have to count them.
How to even work through the whole process of cousins?
I've at least got around 15, maybe 15, more.
15, yeah, okay. Eva?
Well, I don't have that many at all. I've got all boy cousins, three of them live in Germany, and one lives somewhere in the UK. I'm not exactly sure.
That's presumably one who's at deep cover. Deep undercover. Somewhere in the UK. He could be around the corner from you, Natalie. We don't know.
Who knows?
I've Yeah, I've got 14, Alex. 14? I've got quite a lot. Yeah.
Well, you say that, and I thought I only had a couple of half-cousins, but according to Ancestry DNA, in a little case study, all of us have a minimum of 111 cousins that we don't even know.
What?
Oh. Yes. That's a lot of Christmas cards, that, Alex.
Lord above.
It?
Expensive.
Thank heavens for email. That's all I can say. Send the e-cards. It'll work on that basis. Ancestry DNA, part of Ancestry, of course, the world's largest online family history resource. And entertainment, using advanced DNA technology to reveal genetic ethnicity and uncover new family connections. This is one of the reasons why historian Sir Tony Robinson, whom we had hoped to be speaking to on the production, but due to hiccups with the telephone, I know, it's astonishing, in Lincolnshire, surely not, we didn't quite manage to get through, so we promised Rachel, his producer, that we'd actually sort of at least acknowledge this for ancestry, DNA, etc. But apparently he's related to the Vikings, despite the fact, obviously, he's connected to all sorts of other areas. And this particular ancestry suggests that these are the amazing facts. If you walk across Britain, you're likely to encounter about two cousins every square mile.
Wow.
Ooh. With over 64 million people in the UK, the average Brit will have enough cousins to fill Wembley Stadium twice.
No, really?
Hey, wait! That's something to take to the office, Natalie. Really, you know, it's my cousins. We're gathering together. It's the Tuck cousins, followed by concerts by the McDonald's family.
They might be my cousins.
Exactly.
My colleagues.
Well, this is the thing. Because, do you take the underground to work, Natalie?
I do, yeah.
Well, Londoners share their daily tube commute with 12,000 unknown relations. And you're likely to ride with a cousin in 1 in 4 bus journeys.
Crikey.
Yes, so that's what you call a jaw-dropping start to the programme on Lincolnshire Day.
That is.
Jessica, New Zealand, all over the place, clearly.
I know, it's
spread for stuff. But if you took a cruise back to New Zealand, a cruise on the world's largest liner would give you a chance of meeting nearly 20 relatives at the buffet.
20.
Yeah, that's not suggesting you're eating them, of course, because they're not sort of carnivorous or indeed
weird,
cannibals.
But, you know,
I love my cousins so much, I like to eat them. also, if you finished first in the London Marathon, then the likelihood is that 111 of your relatives would follow you across the finish line. Or indeed, if you finished 111th, you'd probably sort of be. It's very amusing. So, does that kind of set the scene, Natalie, for the sort of cousin days where we get? I mean, it's great. We are family.
Yeah.
It's brilliant in every sense of the word, really.
You need to play, you know, We Are Family, don't
Well, you know,
you?
You're absolutely right. You
That's
know,
such a good suggestion.
Not only is Natalie kind of one of our ace midwit drivers, not only actually Jessica is she celebrating, it's Natalie Tuck Calendar Girl Day because she's actually officially on the Siren FM Adventures at Radio Station calendar. We're looking at working it this year, and it looks as though this year, Natalie, we're probably going to find a place not only for yourself, but also for Eva and Jessica as well. Possibly Emma Tenson might appear on the calendar.
It's such an honour.
It's kind of shows that you've made it in the world, really. in all sorts of ways. But Jessica, have you got any questions for Natalie? Because actually, probably, the next time you do speak to Natalie, you will be a naturalised citizen of the United Kingdom.
I know, big news. But yeah, Natalie, how have you been? Because we haven't talked in quite a while, have we? So what have you been up to recently?
What have I been up to? Life just passes me by. I can't really remember.
Even got to the stage where I'd send her emails, ask you to come on the show, she'd ignore me.
I know,
thought, what's going on?
Yeah. Sorry, Alex. I'm so busy, all the time, and I have a busy couple of months coming up in October and November because I've got a few trips away with work. And
it's her birthday celebration, a bit like the Queen's royalty there.
It's my birthday month, it's a big month, October. And I can't really remember what happened in September now, I'm trying to think.
Try to remember the kind of September when life was...
I visited Yorkshire last weekend. That's what I did, yeah.
Mm. Whereabouts in Yorkshire?
I went back to my hometown of Selby, and then I had a trip to York and a trip to Leeds, and it was lovely.
Oh, nice.
See, this is it. And, of course, upcoming journeys will include the York Maze Hallow Scream and... Before that, of course, it's Countryside Live. So all sorts of things managed to work their way through that the whole process. Of course, actually, we're talking about Drive Eight months and so on. October the 8th, that's next week. We have been informed regularly by Katie Grimerson. It is her birthday. It's all right. We won't forget Katie Grimerson's birthday. So Grimerson and Tuck in the same month. Standing.
Oh.
Anyway, Eva, you, of course, passed through Yorkshire yesterday. Got on your way to drop your sister off at Durham.
I don't know if I saw that much of Yorkshire. I just drove through.
It's best to keep your eyes closed sometimes, because otherwise you'd be so impressed with the routine, you probably think, I don't want to leave ever. You know, it's very important.
Well, I did see some cows in Yorkshire, in the Yorkshire fields. So
it's amazing.
That's a sight,
Weather today, highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 8 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a dry day with sunny spells. Probably in London as well. Anyway, Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Natalie Tuck, who's got to meet at least 110 of her cousins en route to work at this moment?
Well, good luck meeting your cousins. Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I think it's been very interesting today. More so than usual, all the cousin talk.
On Linkage Day, what else can we do than roll these facts out?
Marvellous. I know. And we will be hearing again from you soon.
Yes, I'm sure you will.
Exactly. If you want to find out more about your cousins, of course, you can go to Ancestry, the world's largest online family history resource, with more than 2 million folk who've actually signed up and over 16 billion records who've actually been added, with, of course, the 70 million family trees that are actually on the Ancestry website. Hurrah! Have to be a yellow belly to celebrate the joys of family. Sister Sledge there still got it, even though it originated back in the 1970s. Astounding. Do you feel as though your family, Richard Fitzwilliams?
Oh.
You're part of the Siren family, part of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition family. Of course your family. As we identified ancestry DNA, of course, most of us have got 111 cousins, at least in the UK, we don't even know. So there you go. We are family. Anyway, let's pause for thought. Happy Linkage Day, Richard Fitzwilliams.
Have I, what?
You've got 111 cousins you didn't realise, and I'm wishing you on behalf of the citizens of Lincoln, as we are doing with most of our co-presenters today, probably all of them actually, happy Lincolnshire Day.
Well, may I reciprocate, but may I plead ignorance? I didn't know there was one.
Yeah, you see? Oh, dear Lord. Since 2006, this has actually been worked for, and it's officially held to commemorate the uprising of a revolt by Catholics against the establishment of the Church of England by Henry VIII in 1536. It's celebrated every year on the 1st of October. So there we are.
Heavens, and that 2 years after Henry's break with Rome.
Exactly, exactly. So there we are. We knew you'd have a little poignant point to actually make there, in addition to obviously celebrating famous Lincolnites such as Sir Isaac Newton, Alfred Lord Tennyson, Baroness Thatcher, Joseph Banks, George Boole, Tony Jacklin, and of course, Jim Broadbent. Anyway.
Very fine actor.
Oh, exactly. Not prone to brooding, unlike Michael Fassbender, who's going to be featured in The Scottish Play, which is first up as far as your details. I know. The Scottish Play with a brooding Michael Fassbender. Shall we be watching the trailer as Richard Fitzwilliams takes us through the Thane, out, damned spot, and so on and so forth.
Well, this is a remarkable film. I mean, the director is an Australian. I'd never heard of him. Justin Kurzel, a name to conjure with. And as for Michael Fassbender's Macbeth, I mean, as I discuss it, it is so powerful. Seeing this movie is like, or almost like, symbolically, you could say, some form of cleaver is coming and smashing into your skull. It's so powerful. I mean, there are indelible images here. It's visually amazing, but Fassbender's Macbeth, and they're rather curiously rootless. Usually Macbeth has some form of castle or a very substantial home. Here, he and his wife appear to be virtually nomads, and their rise to the preeminence, which brings them what they wished in one sense, but plenty of doubtful joy in another, is absolutely fascinatingly chronicled. I mean, it's a movie like no other, and I have to say that not too many spoilers here, but from the very beginning you see why Lady Macbeth has the brooding bitterness that she has. And also, let Michael Fassbender as Macbeth, let a maniac like that loose, and I use the term advisedly, and you get, firstly, an unforgettable performance, and secondly, you get someone whom the forces of darkness, the witches, have let loose by their prophecies, and who bring Scotland into, and a visually tremendously dramatic, I mean, a wonderful camera work in this movie, but you really do see a land split by monstrous behavior, by chaos, by murder. This has a sense of ritual, too. The banquet is an extraordinary, rather like the coronation, a spectacle. And when Macbeth goes, shall we say, a little odd at it, it's, putting it mildly, a pretty terrifying embarrassment. But
he has a fully-fledged nervous breakdown. Let's not put no bones about the whole thing. A little odd, he starts seeing spectres and ghosts and Banquo's spectral feasts.
Indeed, as I say, this Macbeth is virtually a maniac. His bravery knows no bounds. When he's fighting, I mean, in the opening battle sequence, he gives his opponent an opportunity to kill him just suddenly. And when, of course, someone who's surprised very often doesn't do what he might, well, you can lose your head on circumstances like that.
I mean, they quite literally do.
Literally, he's a chancer. He is one of the most dangerous Macbeths ever to have.
Let's face it, you know, he was Magneto in the X-Men, so you know, clearly it. He's going to not mess around from that perspective.
Oh, no, it's an extraordinary movie. Not all of it works, but most of it does, and this is a movie with power, and it's visually amazing, and Cotillard and Fassbender make an extraordinary pair, but some of the scenes are quite shockingly violent. There's little doubt that this is a Macbeth who wreaks carnage on his country.
So, Jessica, will you be going to see the Scottish play with Michael Fassbender and friends?
Oh, I really hope so, because I think it's visually stunning. Coming from like an amateur photographer's point of view, I'd absolutely love to just watch it, just mainly for the cinema photography kind of aspect. Ooh. But it's also a classic play, so I just want to see how they've turned it into a film and how they've, I don't know, like I just think Fassbender's an amazing actor as well, so I don't know, I'm just so excited.
So it's thumbs up for our soon-to-be-naturalised UK citizen then,
that's
Richard.
Absolutely, and one of the first things that you could do to celebrate, I would suggest, is to go and see part of the history of its
of Scotland.
Northern part of the Union. Oh, indeed. Yes. I would bring in, incidentally, Polanski's Macbeth. It's just many years ago, but an extraordinary work. This draws comparisons with that because of the imagination behind it.
Eva?
Yeah, I think the visual effects and like the overall look of the production is very good. I always like to see how plays turn out on screen. Mm. So
yes, I agree with you, and I think it is absolutely fascinating. Marion Cotillard also is, we remember as Edith Piaf in La Vie en Rose. I mean, she is an amazing actress, but a fascinating performance, and someone who struggles and fails, as we know, to keep her sanity. But if you're married to this Macbeth,
all she needed was some Clearasil cleansing lotion, that spot would have gone completely. Sorry, shameless plug there.
You've only been there to tell her.
Time travel. Experience never gets old. Well, that's part of the case with The Intern, isn't it, really? When you start talking about an unexpected treat in your next selection, Richard.
The Intern is a really good movie, and I thought that it stars Robert De Niro and Anne Hathaway, and De Niro plays Ben, who's Ben Whittaker, 70, and he dresses in a suit, and well, he wants to keep his life together. He's a widower, and I thought it would be a sort of amiable comedy where he joins a firm which is run by Jules Austin, played by Anne Hathaway, and well, there's plenty of knockabout fun. It is actually a fascinating movie about the challenges of being older and
chronologically gifted. Richard, is what you're trying to sort out, I think. Well, you don't want to say the A word.
I found it is actually one of those movies that is genuinely touching, because you're looking at, as I say, firstly, how you remain useful at when your age advances, but also your experience, and you've quite a lot to give. And if you're amiable like Ben, you find that success, and Jules is extremely successful. This is a firm that's absolutely thriving. But what about her private life? What about her daughter? What about the fact she's got a stay-at-home husband who's feeling the pressures, and the fact that she is working much of the nights? She needs a chief executive, she thinks, to take the pressure off her. And Ben, who's part of this project, the firm is trying to be, as it were, assisting older people finding a temporary niche. It's a fact that Ben becomes indispensable to Jules, because firstly, he becomes her chauffeur, and secondly, there's a great deal she wants to unload. Well,
and that's the classic line of interns, you know, make yourself indispensable. And if Emma Tinson is listening, I'm sure she'd be doing just that at BBC Radio Surrey.
But, you know, one of the strengths of this movie, which could have been a lighthearted piece of froth, it could have been entertaining, it could have been comic, there is a bit of slapstick in one sequence where a pressurized Jules sends her mother a rude message accidentally on a computer, so the mother's home has to be broken into, so her, you know, the message is erased. But that apart, it is a genuinely touching movie where there's sufficient ambiguity in the script in a large number of scenes for the scenes to have gone either way, because the relationship between Ben and Jules is fascinating. And how does it develop, and in what way, and how does the movie cope with the various situations that so many who either are advanced years or indeed are in highly pressurized jobs, how do matters work out if they do? And it's very sensitively scripted. And Nancy Myers, the director, also has cast Renée Russo as a masseuse who has an eye for Ben. It's reciprocal.
Well, let's face it, she started off with Basic Instinct, amongst other things, with respect to Sharon Tate. But so that's Sharon Stone.
Lost none of a touch here, because she's got first-class principals who've got roles with excellent scripts. And so there are laughs. This is a very touching movie. I have a bit of my lump at my throat in the acting moments. It's a very intelligent film. It is fun, and there is quite a lot to laugh about, but it's really a study of the pressures of life, some of the problems they bring, and what you have if you get De Niro and Hathaway on good form, and then excellent form here.
There you have it. Eva, The Intern, does it float your boat?
Yeah, I always like Robert De Niro films, so I'll have to go and see it.
But De Niro has done so little that is good in recent years.
Look, those insurance commercials are fantastic. They're just a whole new area for that, you know?
You've said it, absolutely. Have fun. Maybe, you know, the Meet the Fockers type movie. This doesn't stretch up. Here you've got De Niro. He's got a tremendous screen presence, as we all know, and he brings the experience he's had in cinema to inhabit the
he
world.
He does. And just in case anybody sort of misheard Richard's statement there, please, we're not going to repeat it, but it's the meet the something scenario. But that's very good, because everybody only knows what could actually happen from that point of view. Jessica, The Intern, what does it do for yourself? Is it one that you thought, yes, an ideal double bill with the Scottish play?
Yeah, I think it's quite good, actually. I think De Niro's character could relate to a lot of people and hopefully open people's minds up to the retired age, I think.
Well, the notion of becoming more experientially enhanced.
That's it.
Coming up very shortly, a magical slice of news from Richard's travels. But to take us round to that, Yes, the emotionally overwhelming A Time for Us, the love theme from Romeo and Juliet, primarily because of its Italian connections, which possibly is the sort of piquancy and sadness that Richard Fitzwilliams might have had when, instead of saying Arrivederci a Roma, he celebrated the joys of an adventure in the Roman capital of Rome. Isn't that right, Richard?
Oh, it most certainly is. I mean, if you actually have something like 4.5 days in Rome and you're, so to speak, let loose in perfect weather and can go what you like and the things turn out to be open when you get there, it's extraordinary the amount of capital you can see. And I mean, the fact that you've got a museum or some gorgeous piece of statuary at every street corner, it almost seems. I mean, it's just an amazing piece of living history.
The joys of Pope Innocent X, the Doria Pamphili Palace.
Oh, yes. Now, the Doria Pamphili Palace, I will wax lyrical because it's in the Via Corso, which is so near the Capitol and the Victor Emmanuel Monument. And it is one of the Queen went there some years ago. And one of the important things just to mention is that in Italy, you cannot split up your collection. So families are... they remain as one, so to speak, gigantic entity. And it's absolutely fascinating to see the paintings hung as they were with the Doria Pamphili's ancestors. And they had Pope Innocent X. And the Pope was captured so brilliantly by Velázquez and also by Bernini, one in the painting and the other in a bust. And this palace, which includes some wonderful Caravaggio, such as the Flight from Egypt, I mean, it's my favourite part of Rome.
And did you have a chance to speak to Pope Francis at all? Did you have any words of wisdom? Of course he wouldn't, because he's over in the States. Here
well,
we are. Understandable.
Richard, have you been to see the Areopagus or the Palatine Hill?
Yes, I have, and it's really very, very interesting, that whole area. It's one of the most extraordinary. They have a lot of excavations on the Palatine, and they have the most amazing set. It's like a, almost as you could say, like a gigantic film set, the whole way the forums are laid out. And the Palatine Hill is, of course, the top of the... place where you go and see what is, alas, rather sadly, I'd love to have seen so much more, if the medieval and Renaissance and other collectors had only realized that the forum was well worth preserving, we would have a great deal more. But it's such a fascinating area that you can wander around there. I spent quite a lot of time in the forum, and also there was, as you know, the Forum of Trajan and various other emperors, Caesar, and also where Caesar was assassinated, which wasn't, interestingly, in the main forum. The forum was being renovated in 44 BC. Caesar was assassinated nearby in a place which is actually Rome's sanctuary for stray cats these days. Where they...
Yeah, and that just sums the whole thing up in so many ways. So, you know, now, a major leader and then a couple of millennia later, stray cats. Well, never mind. We won't do the stray cat strut because that would be far too obvious. It's 33 minutes past 8 o'clock, 27 minutes to 9 o'clock. Time is just scootling on. Eva, are you a Roman visitor? Have you checked out Rome yet?
I've never been to Rome, no. I really want to go, but... it's not happened yet.
I must mention also that if you want to get to St. Peter's, when I went to just see what the queue was like...
Yes.
I
mean, go after 6 o'clock.
It was absolutely extraordinary. But if you waited until St. Peter's closes at 7, and I returned about 3/4 hour later, and the queue had gone, this gigantic... queue had simply vanished, and I just walked in. It was quite extraordinary. And it is, of course, amazing inside, with Michelangelo's wondrous Pieta, which I think is one of his most beautiful works. I also saw his Moses in St. Peter in Chains. I mean, the numbers of churches in Rome, it's almost impossible to count. But there is so much beauty. It is absolutely staggering.
Well, Richard, what else could you expect from a city that served as the bedrock to The Man from U.N.C.L.E. as a classic movie of the 21st century? I mean, there we are. The Trevi Fountain would be there. You had 3 coins in there. Celebrate where Henry Cavill actually put his footsteps together with Armie Hammer. You know, I'm sure that's even more fun from the whole thing.
You know, when you have a background, you also need a foreground that's worthy of it. Not... I wish.
Yeah. Okay. Just don't stop. It's Lincolnshire Day. I'm just raising the point.
I think well worth raising. I'm delighted. Incidentally, I must also mention the Palazzo Colonna. This is an absolutely huge palace that no one I know has visited. The reason is it's only open on Saturday mornings. But the Colonna family had the victor of the Battle of Lepanto, which was where the Turks were defeated, and the Ottoman push westward was stopped both there in Malta and in Vienna. And once you have someone of that seniority in the family and the Pope, you have an absolutely glorious palace. I mean, the scale of the beauty in it, it's really, really impressive, especially when you visit the personal apartments, which is the second part of the tour. I do have to say that they've only just opened the Quirinale Palace, the President's Palace, to the public. I mean, there's a problem sometimes with so many dazzling tapestries, chandeliers, paintings, artifacts, because when you go from one room to the other, to the next, each one trying to outdo the other in splendor, when you actually walk out of it, you can sometimes wonder what you've seen. Yeah. And that is the problem with the Quirinale. It's fascinating. It most certainly is. But it's almost as though there's so much baroque.
I'm sure that part two of Richard Fitzwilliam's love affair with Rome will continue.
Exactly. Henry Moore.
But we've gone from the Scottish play, which I think was pretty much thumbs up all round, and even if it's only for the photography.
It is terrifically powerful, and I mean, there's no question. Be prepared to get quite a few shocks.
And through to The Intern, which is emotionally overwhelming, through to Italy and a whole variety of other factors. Jessica,
yes, I didn't expect it to The Intern. Top class performance.
Well, never mind. It happens. As I say,
Nancy Mayers is experienced as a director, but it's charming what she can pull off.
Yeah, well, Jessica, what are the last two questions we need to put to Signor Fitzwilliams?
So, Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Oh, I've enjoyed it immensely.
Bene. Che bene. Por il Moro.
I thought you almost said Ben-Hur. Is it interesting? So you're looking for links there. Well, they're going to remake Ben-Hur. They are, as we speak.
I know.
Remaking. It's the third remake of the classic. There was the 1925 version with Raymond Navarro. There was the 1959 with Charlton Heston, Stephen Boyd, Jack Hawkins. And now there is a third Ben-Hur, which will be one of the most interesting films.
He's going like a Roman juggernaut. Well, the next question, Jessica, is...
Will we be hearing from you next week?
I look forward to it very much.
Wonderful.
Where you actually start off by dialing one contact, you think you're actually going to go to Arthur McKenzie, you think, no, actually, that doesn't sound at all like Arthur McKenzie. We were speaking to Ian Lennox instead. Then we get the right number for Arthur McKenzie. Arthur's not around because he's not answering the phone or whatever. So we say, well, let's go back to Ian Lennox. Oh, wait, happy Lincolnshire Day, Ian Lennox.
Thank you.
Such excitement. As you'll appreciate, obviously, the sheer joy of Sergio Aguero scoring the penalty in the last moments of the Borussia Mönchengladbach game, giving us three glorious points. Nice to see that resonation because it comes through. I know you're celebrating in Newcastle as we speak.
That's a rather subjective point of view.
But the great news is, because we come to you now, because Arthur didn't answer his phone, we don't know why, maybe we just didn't get the right number. Anyway, we can officially say that last night, Jessica Ward, for she is in the studio now, handed and returned back a fully read edition of Gentlemen and Players, isn't that right, Jessica?
I did indeed.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I did. I don't sound too surprised.
Collect your survivor's badge at the door.
And to celebrate, she's going to become a fully naturalised UK citizen next week. You know, yep. So that's how influential.
Yeah, I do presume that is coincidental.
It's the power of the pen. Jessica, your chance now to sort of wax lyrical about the text with the writer.
Well, I really, really loved how you, like, your characters. I just loved their personalities and how different they were. And I was saying to Alex last time how it is a story that's kind of been done, like, a lot over the years, but your version's very different, and I really loved that. I was just wondering why cricket in
and
particular.
Not rugby, for instance.
Yeah, or football, because we all know you love your football.
Well, these things just happen really as much as anything, but if you look at the history of cricket, it was a sort of microcosm of the English class structure. Mm. What happened in England in the 19th century was that the public schools, predominant sports of public schools, were not rugby, it was football and cricket originally, and the upper classes deplored what happened when professional football took over. Because they had ideals of the game being the thing and not the result. And, of course, the professional sport changed all that, and they absolutely hated what was happening in football. So they fought a rearguard action on the cricket field against it. And added to that, English society was very much class-oriented, it still is, I suppose, but certainly in those days it was overt. And so it lent the whole story of the talented commoner and the romance with the obstreperous wild child of the aristocrat.
Yeah.
It was a sport that sort of gave the tapestry to it. Really, it lent itself into that. And there are, during my research, it was extraordinary the overt racism that went on in English society in the early 20th century, late 19th century. It made you shudder, really, when looking at it. So it all lent itself into that. And the behaviour of the woman's father was more understandable in that sort of context. It has got a historical background to it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why I chose it, and it was strange choosing cricket, actually, because I never played cricket at a high level at all, but I was reasonably good at it. But once you start describing the actions and the play of really top class cricketers, you have to. I couldn't write off the top of my head. I didn't have the knowledge, the empirical knowledge, so I had to do all the research into it. It was a very interesting experience, actually.
Yeah. One of the pieces of jargon you said it was a maiden, and I wasn't really sure what that was. So I was just wondering.
Oh, maiden over. If you bowl an over that was six balls and no one scores a run off it, the batsman don't score a run. It's called a maiden. You pulled a maiden.
Oh, okay.
I don't know the actual derivation of that expression, but I don't know. But that's what it means anyway.
Okay. that's amazing. Yeah, because I found you had done a lot of research for it.
It
really came across. So I was just wondering, how did you conduct your research? Did you just do it online? Or?
Oh, a lot of it's on. It's fantastic online now. Mm. I mean, I can Google into how to bowl an outswinger, and there'll be some professional cricketer telling you exactly arm action and everything.
Mm.
So that was a great help. But the other thing I did was I actually took a copy of the manuscript along to Durham County Cricket Club, and I got the head coach, a chap called Jeff Cook, to read it.
Okay.
Because I was worried in case I might commit any schoolboy howlers. I did an awful lot of reading of books, the history of cricket and that sort of stuff, and I read books by people like Jeff Boycott, who's a famous England batsman, and who is one of the... he's got an extraordinary cricket brain, as Mr. Boycott.
And a Yorkshireman, of course.
Yes, yes.
I say this because we've been celebrating, and once again, we invite you to join in the joy, Ian Lennox, of Lincolnshire Day, because today is officially October 1st, Happy Lincolnshire Day.
Oh, really? So what do you do now in Lincolnshire Day?
Lots of people dress up in yellow to celebrate the Lincolnshire Yellow Bellies.
Why yellow?
Eva, would you mind if these explain to me? Geordie, why Lincolnshire folk like to dress in yellow?
Because we're known as Yellow Bellies.
Simple.
Now, where does that come from?
Wasn't it because the soldiers or the regiments used to have a yellow sachet as part of the uniform?
Yes.
And also, supposedly, back in the day, there was like some kind of river weeds or something that they used to eat, and it used to give them a yellow kind of complexion. I don't know if that's true.
No, it was something to do with the yellow skin complexion.
Yeah.
It just sort of evolved into yellow bellies.
Mm. That's it. Or they're just cowards, you know. It could be just that.
Yes, they march backwards quicker.
There we are. Don't get me started on Geordie's being born within the smell of the time. So, do you know, whilst that's been happening, I've passed over the book to Eva MacDonald, and I'm thinking, Eva, would you like to take it away and have a read as well? You know, because so, obviously, what do you think? I mean, Jessica, you've set the time in terms of the whole thing. Eva, of course, not stressed out as yet with undergraduate studies. What do you think, Eva? Are you up for reading this?
Yeah, can do.
It is a pleasant read.
Raising the profile and audience, Ian, of your books, one reader at a time. You see what we're doing here?
That book's a bit like a baton, isn't it?
Sheer wonderment. Okay, let's move on. I mean, obviously, Jessica, you presumably need to leave us at 9 o'clock. Is that right?
Yes.
Well, just before we actually get there, we've moved from cricket. Let's move on to another sport that Ian will comment on. Yes, of course, it's the Steve McLaren team talk to the latest incarnation of Newcastle United. No, it's not. What is that, Jessica?
It is the famous haka.
Exactly. Portrayed, of course, by the New Zealand rugby team, a.k.a. the All Blacks, who, of course, are going into battle tomorrow, where they actually take on board Georgia. Exactly, the 2nd of October. And doubtless they'll be looking to have a similar sort of decision as England did against Wales and say, shall we go for a penalty? Shall we go for touch? Let's go for a touch and give it to Welsh people in any way. John Wenham, our events diarist, said that England close to making history, actually, in terms of being the first host nation to go out in the qualifying rounds. So, Ian, your thoughts on the England-Welsh game, or are you just so hurt by it? You just can't...
I did watch it. And
it's as bad as Chelsea
really
getting an
equaliser. We should have won by about 10 points. But incidentally, I don't think the decision to take the line-out was the worst decision. There was an extremely difficult kick, which he could well have missed. If he'd missed it, that was it. The game was over. The mistake they made was throwing to the front of the line-out, near the touch line, so they could be pushed into touch. Which duly happened, the Welsh just ambushed them. They hadn't lost a line out all day, I don't think. And so the decision to make it was just on the pitch by the captain, not by the manager. He can't send his shout outs and something like that. I think, quite a reasonable one. The criticism of it would be in the way it was
executed.
Executed, yes. And I think it was. The one thing they had to do was to lose the ball, and the only way they could lose the ball, really, with the sort of history of the game behind them, was to throw it to the front of the line out.
Which is
they'd won the line out all day with ease.
Well, I'm sure Australia, no problems at all as Saturday approaches and they take on England. But Eva, you did say you weren't. Has this World Cup grabbed you as yet? I mean, as Association Football did, have you been tuning in? Did you share the despair of the nation with the England result against Wales?
I didn't see it. No, my brother saw it and he told me the results, but.
After that, yes. Well, clearly you need to watch the England-Australia game. So, I mean, clearly, Jessica, as a New Zealand fan, you would desperately want Australia to beat England. I mean, it goes without saying. But
you know what? Because I'm getting naturalised, I'm going to go with England.
Really?
So, there we go.
Gosh, eh?
I know, shock after shock. We've got to take a quick couple of photos in the studio. Jessica might have to leave us very shortly after that, but we haven't forgotten, Ian, before we actually come back to you for a few other sort of thoughts, such as Chelsea's equaliser, you know, which was going so well until, of course, you know, it went from 2-0 to Newcastle to 2-2. But it's a point, it keeps you ahead of Sunderland. This is the Cameron Tilbury musical selection for this week. Are you ready? And curiously, it's a comment on certain aspects of sport as well, maybe Newcastle United players. Nothing aggressive at all. Myla Mason, Run Like a Girl. Are you ready for this, Ian Lennox?
Yes, thank you.
Myla Mason, Run Like a Girl. Still not quite sure in terms of whether... Are we talking Jessica Ennis running there? Are we talking a sort of general, sort of slightly camp running? Are we talking Newcastle United running? I don't know. What do you make of that, Ian Lennox?
My mind's a bit blank, I suppose. I'd like to read the lyrics, because yes. I can't hear them properly on the phone. But it just seemed to drift along quite peacefully, and a little bit of... change of
beat,
tone,
tempo,
and
you will be purchasing it from your online retailer as yet, I wouldn't have thought, really.
No.
Eva, it's the first time you actually heard Run Like a Girl with Myla Mason. What are your thoughts?
I think it was good. It was a relaxing tune, as you say.
A relaxing tune.
I think it was good.
Yes, but if it sends you to sleep,
Well, sometimes it's appropriate to work through that.
Right.
Just in case people are wondering, Yorkshire Day, the precursor to Lincolnshire Day in so many ways, was first celebrated back in 1975. And that, of course, is the 1st of August. So Lincolnshire Day celebrated first time in the 21st century in 2006. So there we are. And is there a Tyne and Wear Day or a Durham Day at all? I mean,
there's Durham Miners Gala Day.
Well, that's true, but that's not really...
It's on the wane. There used to be a lot of miners gone the days up here, but they've sort of drifted away because there's so few miners now.
Well, never mind. So have Newcastle United turned the corner? I mean, that's the next critical thing we need to ask you, because you know there are over 111 unknown Ian Lennox cousins out there who are probably sort of tuned in, sort of thinking, what does our unknown cousin, as we found from Ancestry DNA, we all have at least 111 unknown cousins in the UK. What are you making of the Steve McLaren era? Is it a case of, yes, success followed by success?
For the first time, McLaren actually chose his best players and then fitted a system to accommodate them rather than exactly the opposite. He had players out of position before that. You know, the best players in. Mm-hmm. How you could pick a Newcastle team without Perez in is just beyond me. That was always going to happen because there's a new man coming in. He's got to look at the stuff and he's going to have a different perspective. They've gone through the first seven games now. They haven't had a single victory. Yet they've had draws against Chelsea and Man United away. And if you look at the players, they've got some very good players individually. They were never the sum of the parts. That was the trouble. And I think that he played 4-4-2 against Chelsea. And some of the players obviously were helped by that. He played his best players in their best positions, I think, which is the basis of it. If you've got five or six really good players, the first thing you do is make them perform to their best.
Clearly.
And the others fill in the gaps, don't they? What has happened in Newcastle is that actually the owner has now started to spend money. £50 million in the close season, and he's saying he's going to spend some more in January. So they were talking about two more transfer windows to transform the team. And if he continues to buy decent players in, they will be transformed. Gaston Elliott have got the basis of a top 10 team now.
A sleeping giant, one might say.
Geez, well, they've been up for years, haven't they?
Well, we'll work our way through that. Ian, if you're kind enough to stay with us as we go up to the news in a matter of moments, we're going to be following that with the EVA test. Yes, the EVA test.
Is this the Chelsea doctor?
But it is to do with Dr. Marco Gowden, who's a consultant gynecologist and medical expert in reproductive medicine. Yes, a new EVA test that's actually developed to actually help infertile couples and so on. So that's coming up as far as we're concerned here on Siren. We're also going to reveal with Ian Lennox why next week we'll not be featuring one, two, three, four Newcastle people will be on the show next week. Excellent weather today, highs of 17 degrees centigrade, lows of 8 degrees centigrade, a dry day with sunny spells. So sounds good, doesn't it, Ian Lennox?
Yes.
Always celebrating when the news entails a note of a Manchester City victory.
I just popped my head out the door, actually, and it's rather cold outside.
Do you know, Eva, you said it was quite cold as well when you were coming in this morning.
I did say it was cold, that's because it was.
As we said
that's
in that...
as good a reason as any, Eva.
He doesn't mess around, that's why you do. He sorted through that, Zadam. She was in Durham, actually, yesterday.
So
she was close by you, Arthur. Really? Ian, without realising it.
Well, she could have left my book.
No, that was Jessica.
I've got it wrong way around.
Jessica's left us now to do some deep, meaningful, wonderful academic journalistic material. So
I got the book.
Exactly. Don't make it sound like a consolation prize.
No, I got the book.
Yeah, exactly. And again, we're looking forward to the EVA test. But as we trailed ahead before the news, which curiously didn't mention Lincolnshire Day at all, I thought, how outrageous, how London-centric of the news team not to mention... You know, the fact that today is Lincolnshire Day, but still, never mind.
What was the last item in that? Somebody's boyfriend or something?
The diver, Tom Daly.
Oh, yes.
He's getting married to his boyfriend.
Is he? Oh,
21st century. Well, there we are. Celebrate. Moving on. Yeah. Next week, let me just do a quick calculation. Professor Scott Davidson, obviously from Newcastle, back on the show, you know, with respect to that. Hopefully Arthur McKenzie, if he answers his phone and doesn't get confused about the whole thing. Second, will actually be on with us. Ian Lennox, as ever, ace Tyneside writer. And Bill Steele is joining us.
Oh, Bill,
exactly. I mean, are we going Newcastle crazy next Thursday or what? I mean,
Bill's a smashing lad. He's a good lad. You
know, his son Christian's also scheduled to join us as well. Possibly
he's an entertainer now, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, if that's not ideal motivation for you to actually learn how to listen live online to sirenonline.co.uk so you can, you know, keep abreast of Bill Steele.
I shall Google it now, Alex.
There you are, you see. That's the key thing. So it's a little trailer head there in which, yes, Eva, next week, Newcastle crazy, quite literally, in every sense of the word.
Yes.
Just to actually redress the balance, we'll be also hopefully going to the Yorkshire Harrogate Society to talk about Countryside Live, which is a couple of weeks away. So the event that's taking place in Harrogate, the autumnal event, will be focused on as well, and a whole heap of other goodies as well. So that's to come. That's 168 hours, of course, from now. So I know we mustn't wish our lives away, but it's always exciting. After which, we'll also be celebrating, presumably, England's victory against Australia. Will you be tuned in to that Twickenham game this Saturday, Ian Lennox?
Oh, of course I will, yes. I think Arthur's going to come round as well. Arthur comes round not so much to watch the match, to watch me shouting at the players.
Yeah, well, he's an observer.
He finds it more entertaining, especially in Newcastle games. He sort of chuckles away. He'll have a heart attack, lad, he says.
Well, you know,
that's just the warm-up.
Well, when you see him, remind him he should be on air with us next Thursday. That's the important thing. And we tried the number. To be fair, I'm assuming the number you gave me, I take full responsibility for this, because what happened, Eva, revealing this as well to the listener, I wrote down exactly the same number for Arthur as I had for Ian.
Oh, right.
And when I actually phoned who I thought was Arthur, I was going to introduce him as Arthur before I thought, that doesn't sound like Arthur McKenzie.
No.
I recognise that.
You still called me Arthur, though.
I did. You noticed
it. Rose of it.
You did indeed, exactly. You know, and as a result, we got even more Ian Lennox post-Canadian trip.
What you should do to Arthur is to say you're going to discuss DIY and you'll have him ringing you.
Well, fair enough. Exactly. Yeah, there is, of course, that, you know, the
probably about 6 o'clock in the morning.
The UK discus champion who became a detective chief inspector, ace writer and DIY expert. It's got to be a story there somewhere.
Yeah, that's a reverse order of importance to
Arthur. Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox, please?
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us?
Yes, I have, Eva. Thank you very much.
And will we be hearing again from you soon?
I hope so, yes.
And this, strangely enough, is going to take us around to a chat with consultant gynaecologist and medical expert in reproductive medicine, Dr. Marco Gowden, graduated from Edinburgh in 1987 and involved with the EVA test.